Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures. For more than 50 years, the museum has told stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character. Details at texancultures.com.
From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, why can't Texans register to vote online? A lawsuit seeks to change that. It's been halted with a court order, but how is Governor Abbott's ban on refugees still impacting refugee resettlement here? And billionaire Michael Bloomberg sets his sights on Texas in his presidential run. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Texas residents have until March 3rd to register to be able to vote in the Super Tuesday March primaries, and they have to do so in person. But the League of Women Voters is looking to eventually change that. The nonpartisan organization filed a lawsuit on Wednesday claiming that Texas violates the National Voter Registration Act by not providing voter registration with online driver's license applications. Grace Shamin is the president of the League of Women Voters of Texas.
It involves the motor voter law, which is when voters go to renew their Texas driver's license. It's something that happens pretty often. Sometimes you could renew online, sometimes you renew at the office. If you renew your Texas driver's license online, according to the motor voter law, you should be able to automatically update your voter registration. That is not happening now. At the current time, people go to update their driver's license. And if they check off saying they want to update their voter's registration, then they're provided a link to another website at the Secretary of State's website, and they have to fill out a voter registration card. Then they have to print it. They have to figure out where to mail it. They have to sign it, put a stamp on it, and send it in the mail. Then they have to go back to the driver's license website to complete whatever they're doing there. So it is not an automatic process. And we believe that it is time for Texas to create a process that is automatic, just as the motor voter law intended.
So Texas does not have online voter registration.
Texas does not have online voter registration. Every registration card that is filled out must be signed by a person, by the voter. Pen and ink signature.
Yeah, the legislature calls that they want a wet ink signature.
They want a wet signature. That's right. Yet, when I go to the bank and do activities at the bank, or I do many things online, it is considered legal, including getting my driver's license renewed. But for the voter registration, they insist upon a wet ink signature, whereas I believe about 40 other states have online voter registration. They've come up with a safe and secure process for providing that voter registration online, where voters can update their address automatically, and they can confirm that they're registered. They can change their name if they need to. They can change their address if they need to. It should all be able to be done by the voter.
So is it your impression that this is something that is preventing individuals from being able to register to vote?
It is. It does prevent individuals from registering to vote. It also creates a barrier. How many people have a computer with a printer at home so that they could print up the form? How many people can figure out what the address is of their county voter registrar? How many young people actually have a stamp? Young people don't have stamps. Ask my kids. They don't mail anything because they do everything online. It is common practice what people do. We need to bring Texas into the modern age. But this particular lawsuit is to bring the Texas DPS, who helps us with our driver's license. And when we renew online, this lawsuit is to have those particular people be able to renew their voter registration application and do it all online. It should just be a seamless process.
Do you think we see the results of these types of barriers in the turnout? So how are we doing as far as voting goes?
Well, voter turnout is still low in Texas. We did much better at the last election. There were a lot of voters registered in Texas, but still we are running very low in voter turnout, and especially with young people registering to vote.
This process, making it as difficult as they can, not allowing online voter registration. We have a low voter turnout compared to other states. Is this all part of some sort of design?
It very well may be. We consider it a way to keep people away from the polls. When people can't just easily register to vote in a way that they feel comfortable, then yes, I do think it is a barrier that keeps people away from the polls. It's something that we shouldn't be talking about in 2020. This is ridiculous. It is time to move on, folks. This is the way most of the other states are doing it, and we need to have online voter registration here in Texas. This specific lawsuit will only impact those who are updating their driver's license, where it should be seamless and online update of their voter registration card, too.
Have you heard any issues with the Real ID Act and how people need to update their driver's licenses in order to get that gold star on their driver's?
I know about that.
And yes. How if you don't have a Real ID driver's license come election day, that it will not be counted as having an appropriate voter ID?
So that is not true. So I want to be very clear. The new federal Real ID, where you have a star on your driver's license, impacts whether you can fly. It does. It impacts whether you can fly, whether you can get on a plane with the TSA. It does not matter at all at this time in our elections. When you go to vote, there are 7 IDs you need. It does not matter a hoot whether you have that star on there or not. You do not need a Real ID to be able to vote here in Texas. Even next November, you do not need a Real ID.
Now, some people, that's circulating that you do, and whether or not that is a scheme of some sort or misinformation that is out there, then people, it needs to be said and put on the radio, I guess, so that people know that, no, I don't need a Real ID to have a voter ID.
So I have recently discussed this with the Texas Secretary of State's office. No, you do not need a Real ID to vote. You just need one of the 7 IDs that have been commonly used in the last elections. There will be no changes before the November election. So I do believe it is misinformation, and we need to be very clear. I'd love to work with the news sources and with the Secretary of State's office in getting out messaging that Real ID is not something people have to worry about right now. They need to worry about it if they want to go on a plane ride in November. They do not need to worry about it for voting.
Grace Shamin is the president of the League of Women Voters of Texas. Governor Greg Abbott says Texas is closed to refugees. He says the state needs to take care of its own before it seeks to help others. And he told this in an official document to the U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Abbott's decision to end refugee resettlement in Texas takes advantage of President Donald Trump's September decree that state and local governments would now have to opt into the federal refugee resettlement program. However, days later, a federal judge temporarily halted the Trump administration's policy, meaning that refugees can continue to settle in Texas for now. Russell Smith is the CEO of Refugee Services of Texas.
Refugee Services of Texas has offices all over the state. We are in Austin, Dallas, Fort Worth, Houston, Amarillo, and a new office down in the Rio Grande Valley. Our main purpose is refugee resettlement, which is helping individuals who've been kind of displaced by war, violence, and oppression, who are moving to Texas and to our communities, get settled in and get acclimated and provide them some services as they are starting their new lives. So the refugee resettlement is the main thing that we do, but we also we've got a growing set of services to survivors, international and domestic survivors of labor and sex trafficking. We provide some very low-cost immigration legal services to refugees and others. We work with unaccompanied children and do some family reunification work. And then recently, we have been building and expanding services to those seeking asylum. And that's such a growing population and such a population in need here in Texas.
The Texas in fiscal year 2019, Texas led the nation in resettling 2,458 refugees. That's about 8% of all the refugees resettled in the U.S. During that time. Why Texas?
We actually resettled about 1,000 of those. And in any given year, we resettle, you know, somewhere around a quarter to a third of all of the individuals coming to Texas. And then, interestingly, if you look at the numbers, we as Refugee Services of Texas resettle about 3% of all individuals that come to this country anywhere, right? So one out of 30 or so will come to a Refugee Services of Texas site. Texas is a welcoming state. Texas is a prosperous state. It's a growing state. There are great opportunities. There are, amazing communities that are very welcoming. We do understand how refugees kind of build the fabric of our community, as well as contribute to continued economic growth. You know, refugees get settled quickly, and the statistics show that they become self-sufficient fairly quickly, and they start, they're entrepreneurs and start businesses at a higher rate than the general population. They pay more in kind of taxes and economic benefits than they ever will kind of draw down in benefits or support that we are providing them as they get their start here in the community.
So if Governor Greg Abbott has his way, Texas will be seeing no new refugees. When he made that announcement that he would be closing the door for future refugees, had you heard this was coming? Did it take you by surprise? What was your reaction?
We had been working on, there had been this executive order that had given states and localities a say over whether or not refugees got resettled in their communities. There had been a lawsuit filed against that, which yesterday an injunction has been placed on it. There had also been kind of concurrently work done, meetings with the governor and with the staff. We had been hopeful that that would lead to a positive response from the governor. We had been locally working with, mayors and county judges across the state and had, a pretty unanimous support for refugees being resettled in all the communities that we work with. So when he came out and said that he would not give his approval, it was a little bit disappointing. It was a little bit surprising. It was very disappointing. As a lifelong Texan, I know that we are a very, you know, accepting, welcoming, prosperous state, and that welcoming refugees is something that we need to be doing.
So what did that do to, say, your outlook for the future of your organization? I know you do more things than just settle refugees. So it seems to be a large thrust of what you do. The thing is, it seems to me that resettlement of refugees is not something you can turn on and off like a light switch. There's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of partnerships. It could be very difficult to stop and start on a dime.
Sure. Yeah, and I think the before we got too deep into kind of what the future would hold for us, the injunction did also, I mean, it's been kind of a bit of a roller coaster kind of going back and forth and looking at planning. We did build in to our planning last year that we knew the executive order had been issued, and we, you know, were already kind of expecting a low year for resettlement. We, as an organization, we have been diversifying our funding sources and the populations that we serve so that we are able to be sustainable. There's been a lot of closures across the country. There's been the resettlement network has lost a tremendous amount of capacity. So our overall goal has always been to ensure that we have good systems and sustainability, because we know that refugee resettlement will pick back up, right? There has been, in the history of the resettlement program, every single administration has been supportive, whether it's been Republican or Democrat. And in fact, the most refugees resettled ever under administration was under President Reagan. So we know that resettlement will pick back up. We know that there's going to be a need for organizations to be able to ramp back up to serve a larger number. And we also know that our sister agencies have closed and gone out of business at a pretty alarming rate. So we are kind of planning for ensuring that we are surviving, knowing that there will come a day that we are needed to step in and help rebuild the capacity that has been lost over the last few years.
So, as you say, there is a reduction in the overall number of refugees coming to the United States, and that is because, as I understand it, that President Trump, he has lowered the amount of refugees who would be allowed. He has reduced it 40% for 2020 from the previous year.
Right, right. And it's gone down. I mean, in the last year of the Obama administration, somewhere around 100,000 was the cap. President Trump, in his first, it's called a presidential determination, which sets the cap. His first one was 45,000, but simultaneously, the administration built administrative roadblocks that made it harder and harder for people to get through the system. So even in the year with 45,000 as the cap, there was almost exactly half of that. There was 22,500 individuals resettled. The following year, which was the last fiscal year that just finished, the cap had gone down from 45,000 to 30, and we actually got closer to the 30 last year. And then for this current year, it went down from 30 to 18,000, and then also throwing in that executive order that is now no longer in effect.
Now, Texas is the first state to say we will not accept any refugees at all. 40 states have said we will take them, and these are basically breaks down almost 50-50. These are bipartisan governors who have said this. This is not a complete partisan type issue, is it?
No, and I think that proves the point that refugee resettlement has really never been a partisan thing. There are so many benefits to our communities, our economies, our foreign policy, and people understand that it is kind of, it's our moral obligation to help people who have been fleeing violence and war and oppression. And it's never been a partisan issue. And you're seeing that in the fact that over half of, I think it's about half of the governors who said yes, said were Republican governors.
In during the Obama administration, Governor Abbott made news by saying he was going to refuse refugees being resettled into Texas who came from states that sponsored terrorism. How did that work out?
He actually just pulled the state out of like the refugee resettlement program, meaning that every state has like a state coordinating body that oversees resettlement activity. Texas did not stop resettling individuals. Instead of the state being in charge, what happened was that four nonprofit organizations kind of took over in different parts of the state. And actually, we are overseeing resettlement in Central Texas, so we are one of the four. It wasn't that stopped the resettlement of individuals. He was mostly concerned, I believe, about Syrians. I think the travel ban and a lot more kind of the national policy changes really reshaped who was able to be resettled as a refugee. So Texas continued to resettle refugees. There are other infrastructure in place now that kind of oversees that. But instead of seeing everybody that we see are in need, but we are no longer seeing individuals from Syria, from Iraq. The populations we've seen generally in the past few years have been Congolese, they've been Burmese, and we continue to see a lot of individuals from Afghanistan who worked with the U.S. Over there.
Russell Smith is the CEO of Refugee Services of Texas. Michael Bloomberg is looking at Texas to propel him to the Democratic nomination for president. Last weekend, the self-made billionaire and former mayor of New York City launched a bus tour of Texas in San Antonio. I traveled with Bloomberg on his bus, and he told me that he will dedicate significant resources to flip the state blue and support whoever becomes the eventual presidential nominee in November. There were over 100 people jammed into an upscale taqueria in San Antonio's Market Square. They're here to listen to Michael Bloomberg make his presidential pitch. It's an early Saturday morning, but that didn't keep away George Kause.
I've always had a inkling of supporting Michael Bloomberg if he got in the race. I think he's the right guy. He's got the strength. He ran a huge city, and so he's got the experience. And I'm really interested in his position on international affairs, especially in relation to Mexico, which is where I work a lot.
Kause describes himself as politically center and independent. He was appointed Assistant Secretary of Commerce in the Reagan administration.
I think he's a good counterpart to Donald Trump, which this country seriously needs to look at.
The crowd seems to be made up of mainly outcast, longtime Republican voters who, like Lionel Sosa, disagree with either the policies or temperament of Trump.
I'm a Republican, but I think Bloomberg is our only chance. I think when we get too far to the right or too far to the left, the country gets a little bit out of kilter. I think we need to go to sanity again. And I think that Mike is the right man.
Sosa, an advertising executive, was an advisor to Reagan and both Bush presidential campaigns.
Good head on him, good moderate, great business person, has done a great job in New York, and I support him 100%.
Outside the restaurant, the scene was dramatically different with aggressive anti-Bloomberg protesters. With Trump 2020 flags and a billboard-sized come-and-take-it banner with an assault rifle icon, the anti-Bloomberg forces were letting the former New York mayor know they strongly disagree with one of his signature issues, guns. When Bloomberg addressed the crowd, he didn't back down and highlighted his track record on reining in guns.
Donald Trump is a president who's in the pocket of the gun lobby. Instead of just complaining, I took on the NRA, and the NRA is now in disarray, and they're having fundraising problems.
Bloomberg said he created and funded a national organization that is pushing for universal background checks.
Nobody wants to take away anybody's guns, just background checks, called Every Town, and it's got 6 million supporters so far, and we're still going, and we will get it done.
While Bloomberg was shaking hands in the crowd, one of the pro-Trump protesters, Corey Harris, mixed in and cozied up for a selfie. Wearing his red Keep America Great cap, he snapped his photo. Bloomberg didn't flinch.
There was one guy this morning who didn't want to shake my hand. I mean, just looked at him and he said, no. And I said, okay, thank you, but thank you for coming.
Harris said Bloomberg is wrong on guns, and the recent church shooting in White Settlement, Texas proved it.
Well, I'm a big supporter of our Second Amendment rights. If you look at the church shooting 2 weeks ago, the shooter was stopped in 6 seconds.
Jack Wilson, a trained volunteer church security officer, shot and killed the shotgun shooter after he opened fire and killed two churchgoers. Bloomberg has a different view about the lesson from the White Settlement shooting. He still says only law enforcement officers should be armed.
One guy pulling his gun and shooting, thank God he didn't hit an innocent person. We have police, and if we need more police, we should hire them and train them. But I want people that are trained and run under the authority of the government to provide us with security. I'm not trying to take away anybody's weapons, but I just don't want individuals with their own guns in a crowded theater to start shooting.
Bloomberg's stance on guns might seem to make him a rough fit for Texas, but there's polling that indicates many suburban voters want some tougher gun laws. And Bloomberg says he's running his campaign based on data on what's needed in America and what works.
You can measure public health. During my term in City Hall, life expectancy went up by 3 years in New York City. In this country, in the last 3 years, life expectancy has gone down. Now that's the data. The cause is mainly opioids.
Well, his strategy is a risky one.
Cal Gilson is a political science professor at Southern Methodist University. He points out that Bloomberg, who entered the presidential race late, is essentially ignoring the first four primaries and caucuses and looking to gamble big on Super Tuesday in California and Texas.
So his bet is he didn't have the time or really the personality or interest to do the kind of retail campaigning that is required in both Iowa and New Hampshire. But he did have the money to spend big on television and other kinds of advertising to try to enter the fray on Super Tuesday and win some of those big states, or at least show very, very well.
Gilson said Bloomberg is looking for voters in Texas who haven't had a champion in a long time.
His entry is into the sort of traditional wing of the Democratic Party, the sort of old Lloyd Benson, Lyndon Johnson, John Conley, moderate to conservative Democrats to the extent that they still exist. He has shown no real strength that I'm aware of among Hispanics and blacks. He'll have to build some.
Bloomberg, who is worth over $40 billion, says he's willing to spend big to win in Texas. He's not taking any campaign contributions, and that's why he's not in the debates. And his campaign offices will work to elect Democrats up and down the Texas ballot and will support whoever wins the presidential nomination.
We said that whoever wins, we would keep the major offices open across the country until November 3rd.
Does that include Texas?
Oh, yeah, sure.
And what difference do you think that would make?
Every bit helps.
And Bloomberg says his primary goal is to prevent the re-election of Donald Trump. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You can also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. That's where you can find past Texas Matters episodes, and you can find us wherever you download your podcast. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.